right, we got our Sammy back today. Welcome into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. The Kipper's Justin Bourne. Sammy McKee after a golf trip yesterday.
Dropped straight out of a generic white guy golfer ad today in a sweater vest.
What do you do?
I'm going playing again tonight.
You are?
Yeah, I'm going to play with Twilight with the boys after this. Might get wet, but that's okay.
At least we get you for an hour.
Yeah. It's kind of our life these days.
No boys. Derek Brandeo today.
Nope. Yeah.
We got Neil Oosten.
Oostie in the house.
Neil Oosten.
This guy's the guy.
This is.
If you could pick like Rogers MVPs, like Rogers Radio, Rogers Engineering, he might be the most valuable employee at this.
Because he knows how to do tech stuff.
There's not one thing he can't figure out. Yeah. He has helped me through countless things without making me feel like an idiot, which is amazing.
He doesn't even embarrass him when Sammy loses his password.
Neil Oosten is not a tech name.
What kind of name is it?
It's
golfer.
He's three off the lead. Oosten's three off the lead going into Sunday.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but I think it's just because of Oosten. But yeah.
See, we're more alike than people think.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And it's scary.
I know. It's getting worse as the years go on.
I don't like it at all.
My wife shouldn't either.
Wherever you're watching and listening, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Watching on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus. Thanks for joining us. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. If you get a chance, send us a text. Although we won't read it.
No, we don't have time. But I will say.
Why am I asking this? Every time?
I mean, I put it on
there's
there.
A home run, Sam.
Sometimes
a home run. Yeah,
I keep an eye on it. If someone says something good,
okay.
You know,
that's but why I
Neil
say
Neil from Oshawa weighs in. Uh-huh. On it.
Poor Neil from Oshawa. One of these days. So I opened up my X feed today, and I was scrolling through it, and I saw one of those classic aggregation posts where like somebody writes something and then they'll pull it and put a tweet and it gets a bunch of engagement. And, you know, sometimes you see the big hitters. You see Frege. He's an insider. You know, you see CJ, sometimes Kipper, Pierre LeBrun, all those kind of guys. And I'm like, via JT Bourne? Yeah. What did you say about Marner?
No.
You can aggregate it.
I got radioed in a written article somehow. Yeah. All I said is the thing that we've heard Kipper say, we've heard Frege say, we've heard Dreger, LeBrun, everyone kind of making noise that, seems like Marner would like to stay, right? Doesn't want to go anywhere.
That's the narrative they want out there, boy.
And if he gets to go UFA, stay and play and go UFA. That's what he wants to do.
A lot of the noise comes from, I think, people trying to, I don't know if the right words, guess the narrative or get ahead of the narrative or say to the narrative first.
Right.
But like, in all honesty, it's just, no room for anything to have gotten done between the time that the Leafs got knocked out of the game 7 in the first round to today. Like, there's nothing. There's no discussions. No one's talking to each other. The names aren't being bantered about. It's just super quiet out there, and it will take a life of its own. It's not nothing, and it's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to finish the year. There's something in between that will take a life of its own.
Yeah.
And start the procedures of what's out there. Yeah. They're gonna explore what's out there for Mitch Marner.
Yeah,
that we know
for sure. And what I did, Kip, was I said, all I wanted to do was look at the individuals who are involved in making this decision, and that's Marner, Shanahan, Tree Living, Berube, and to some extent maybe Keith Pelley. But just what are their individual motivations? What do they want to have happen for their own careers, for the Leafs, for all those things? And then try to piece together what makes the most sense.
But there's nothing out there until a third party steps up.
And I'm sure Tree has put this out. Send me
ideas. I wrote this last week that if, you know, and again, the conversation is what if we made Marner available.
Right.
But there has to be a real aggressive team out there saying, we know he's going to UFA next year. We'd like to take a crack at him now.
Yeah.
And you don't go back to Mitch Marner. You don't go back to his agent because you're looking at another hockey club and saying, okay, let's not waste anybody's time here.
What would it look like before I go to my guy?
Correct. And if there's enough on the plate there that it can turn serious, then the Leafs may approach Darren Ferris, Marner's agent, and say,
yeah,
are you guys interested?
I did say in my article that you could see, you know, let's say as a UFA, Marner wanted to go to Florida for $12 million times seven. I think if they came to Mitch and said, and Florida's a random example, don't take anything there, and said, Mitch, would you accept a trade now to Florida? They'll extend you at 12 times seven. That's the way it happens. It has to be what he would do as a UFA anyway. Otherwise, what's he waving is no move for, right? So I'm just saying, outside of that perfect scenario happening, it just seems unlikely to me that it'll happen. Maybe it will in season, but I can't see it anytime soon. I hope I'm wrong, because I would love to see some action, a big trade where they shake things up. I don't think it's likely.
All right, speaking of the Florida Panthers, who you hypothetically threw out there in a trade.
I picked a bad team. Aggregated. Bourne says.
Let's welcome in Jason Bukala, former NHL head scout with those Florida Panthers, and now doing a terrific job writing for us here at sportsnet.ca and working hard still with his pro hockey group. Books, what's happening, bud? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Just getting geared up to head over to Buffalo for the combine for a few days here. And I read Borny's article, and I've been listening to you guys off set here. And
What'd you think?
Before you get to what we think of Jason or of JB's Justin, Jason,
double JB.
Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10, the difficulty of moving Mitch Marner before his contract expires.
I'm going to put it at about an 8.
Wow.
I think it's really difficult. Here's the reasons why. And, you know, I'm just going to build it up behind the scenes. So imagine that I'm on the other end. I'm the guy that gets the call, or we get the call, okay, saying that we're exploring our options. Do you guys have interest? The obvious answer is yes, we have interest. Let me kind of push that aside for a second, let you guys know that, like, already there's only so many teams that can be in play here, because what are you looking at? You're looking at cap flexibility. You're looking at hopefully draft capital, or you're looking at a prospect pool that has some depth pieces that we can add if they don't have draft capital. For me personally, it has to be a situation where the whole salary is taken on, because I'm going to lose the trade. Like, the best player in the trade is Marner, no matter what, no matter where he goes likely. So I already lose the trade at the NHL level. So I need to open up all that money to be able to spend on further assets. So already that takes away, you know, never mind where Mitch wants to go play. That takes away, I don't know, off the top of my head, half the league, maybe more, you know, like right off the top. So really, really difficult. So it's going to, and I'm going to tell you something else. I'm always worried about when we get a phone call, and I just don't like anything getting leaked out. And I guess it depends on who's involved and whatever, but we live in this world nowadays that if something goes sideways with any type of conversation, there's always that squeaky wheel, it seems, in every situation that we deal with in hockey. Somebody without permission to speak says something stupid to somebody and starts leaking out. So that can really have an effect on your organization.
And then, so kind of going through my article there and the motivations for the individuals involved, Books, where were you left at? What did I get wrong? That's what I want to know. Where do you think that I missed?
Well, I don't think you got anything wrong, to be perfectly honest. I mean, this is, so Mitch Marner is kind of like, a high octane sports car for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Think of it this way. He drives revenue at the gate. Okay, he drives revenue. People come to watch him play the game. So I know the building's full anyways, but you understand that there's that whole business side of it. You guys understand it better than anybody else. So Toronto Maple Leafs are a machine. This isn't just hockey. This is a business conglomerate. So from the upper ownership perspective, you know, that's delicate for a short period of time. Because I'll tell you right now, Kipper, you know better than anybody. Like, if a popular Leaf gets traded out of town, even if the fan base is upset for a month or two, come October 1st when the puck drops, the place is jammed anyways. They're still drinking beer. They're still having fun, right? So that's why you don't have the Keith Pelly thing getting wrong. The tree living thing, the Berube one is a little fascinating to me because this doesn't seem like a Berube type of
roster.
Going to be delicate. I don't know how to say it any other way. It doesn't seem like a Berube type of fit if we want to get to the next level. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know how else to say it. So, you know, that one's a little bit delicate. The Shanahan thing, to me, I'm with you, Borny, when you said, like, is he or isn't he the right guy to make this decision? Because, you know, this feels like it's going to be even above his pay grade, this type of transaction.
Okay, we got to kick it into the Stanley Cup Final because yes. I can hear the rest of the country going. More Leafs. See, Sammy, go golf again because we didn't talk about the Leafs yesterday.
5 minutes.
You talked about Lane Lambert, didn't you?
Briefly.
Okay.
So, Books, we got the Florida Panthers for the second straight year in the final. Just, you know, excuse my ignorance. How long were you in Florida, and what were your fingerprints on this hockey club, and what were you most proud of?
Well, first of all, the fingerprints were not only myself. It was myself, Scott Luce, Aaron Janelle, both with the Las Vegas Golden Knights, and definitely Dale Talon. Like, I have to, you know, I'm not that guy. I'm going to sit here and stand up on my soapbox. It's not going to happen. So, but we were there. I was there from 2010 to 2011, I guess, so 2020 in there, in a variety of roles. And, you know, the guys that we have our fingerprints on are, you know, obviously Barkov, Ekblad. We brought in Bobrovsky in free agency, which was, you know, challenging at the time, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, a lot of risk involved in that because there was always good Bob, bad Bob at the beginning. We've talked about it before. Now he's good Bob, and he's got the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row, so this is the best version of himself. I think what we're most proud of, though, Kipper, is that, like, GMs walk into organizations and, you know, the owner has a mandate to win. I get it. Especially in a smaller market. Florida's a big market when you're winning, but generally speaking, it's a smaller market. So the owner wants to win. But when the GM walks in, if he wants to build a team a certain way, if we didn't leave him with any assets, any draft capital, anything to maneuver his, like put his own fingerprints on it, he moved out Matheson. He moved out Montembeau. He moved out Tippett. He moved, like we had Frankie Vetrano there. We had Vincent Trocheck there. Like you start to go through all these names, and they didn't fit the puzzle for what they wanted necessarily. But imagine if we didn't leave the cupboards flush with all those first round picks, all the draft capital that we left them, and the asset management, you know. So mm-hmm. I think I'm most proud of the fact that we managed the organization what I would call responsibly, and that falls on Dale 100%. But if you look at Toronto right now, like when Tree comes in, the cupboards are bare. Like you want to win, right? But you got no draft capital. You've only got a couple of prospects. And it's really hard to make trades on the, off your NHL roster. So I think what I'm most proud about is the continuity that we developed to run the organization.
When you drafted Barkov, did you foresee him becoming this?
We actually did, yeah. And this a lot of this goes out to a quick story for you. So Jari Kekalainen, who's Jarmo's brother, there's three Kekalainens. Yanni's with Nashville. I had a chance to work with Yanni and Jari here in Florida. Jari was also working for the pro team in Finland that Barkov was coming through. So he saw him, like, you know, as a youth coming all the way through. So we felt really good about it. His interview in New Jersey that year blew us away. Well, part we were in New York. Draft was in New Jersey because no disrespect, but, you know, you want to stay in New York instead. But anyways, His interview blew us away. So we had like Seth Jones in, Drouin in. MacKinnon wasn't coming to us because Patrick Waugh had taken over the Avalanche at the time. So, you know, that was going to go there. He was just coming out of the queue. But he blew those other guys out of the water in terms of his put togetherness, I guess is the best way to put it. He was a pro. I will say this, of all my times up on stage, I don't even know if they knew who Barkov was, but there was actually booze in the stands when we drafted Barkov. We're walking up there and there's like some booze and I'm looking around going, really? Like, you must have no clue what you're talking about. And fast forward to today, I'd say that was pretty accurate.
So if we often described Wayne Gretzky as being two or three moves ahead when it came to putting the puck in the net, can the same thing be said for Barkov defensively?
I would say Barkov in all three zones. He's the most elite player and the most elite thinker in all three zones in the game. Hands down. There's no question about me or about it. 6'4", 224 pounds, silky smooth hands, makes plays in tight for a big body. You know how big bodies have to extend pucks, you know, but he makes them in tight. I'll tell you right now, if he played in the market up here, like call it Toronto, for example, people would be salivating over this guy. Like he's getting more recognition now, but this is by far, I've scouted probably, I don't know, 3,500 players in my career, something like that. And this is the smartest hockey player I think I've ever scouted.
So just to add on that, if now we're talking about like the offense of McDavid versus the defense of Barkov, have we seen a matchup that is so intriguing as this in terms of two elite guys coming from different sides of the game?
Oh, that's a great question. Off the top of my head, I don't feel like it. I feel like it's been a long time, you know, like Barkey's one of those guys that, like, when Jersey was really good, even if they came up against a juggernaut opponent, like they had the guys in the middle of the ice that would be able to shut down opponents. Obviously they had a team concept there, but I can't recall the last time that anything this, you know, the yin versus the yang. Like, I haven't seen anything like this in forever.
Nothing comes to my mind at all.
No. So elite on different spectrums of the game. It's really special for the fan base to be able to watch this.
Did Tiikkanen and Gretzky ever have a, like, when they were on different teams? Because they would have, did they ever have sort of, was he not the preeminent defensive shutdown guy for a while, Tiikkanen?
I don't think it really came to that because Tiikkanen also followed Gretzky to St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken, after leaving the Rangers.
Okay, so they wouldn't have had a ton of head-to-head time to...
It'd be interesting to go back in history and find a shutdown guy, whether it's
against
Carbonell, somebody, but...
Yeah, that's a great name. Like, the Guy Carbonell's, actually, when you say that, like, that's kind of like Barkey's mindset from his defensive red line down, like a Guy Carbonell type of a guy. But then as soon as the puck gets turned over, he's exploding up ice and he's going to do damage.
Well,
and
I referred last night on Sportsnet Central that game four in Boston with his great individual effort. Do you remember that goal coming back from
ridiculous?
They were down 2-0. He scores the third goal, busting through the middle of the ice, going backhand, forehand, top shelf. So this guy's got the ability to create a great individual goal offensively as well.
Yeah.
But
when he busts through the middle seam like that, he's like Mario Lemieux back in the day going right down the middle. He's silky smooth like that. And
Wilkinson. Wilkinson.
Neil Houston? Who are you talking about? Oh, is it the defense Mario went through?
Over Minnesota North Stars.
I got to ask you about Barkov, though. He takes no penalty minutes. He's not physical. Yeah. Like, he's Sedin-like when guys are in his face. He doesn't ever seem to be involved in anything ever. But at the same time, he doesn't shy away with his play, right? Like, can you intimidate this guy to get him to shut down?
No.
Too big and too strong.
He's robotic.
You know what I mean? But he doesn't have that any edge.
He's robotic. He's the ultimate pro. Like, you know how we talk about guys living in opponents' heads at this time of year? You know, that kind of stuff? Not a chance. He's just not... It's not happening that way. This guy comes from a Russian dad who came to Finland to play pro hockey, married a Finnish lady, so he was born in Finland, and that's how... So he's got the kind of... he's got that mix in his DNA, that cerebral mix that works so perfectly for him. Nothing. I've never seen him raise his voice. Like, it's
I think someone in Boston tried to fight him off a draw, and he was just like, "What are we doing here?"
Yeah, that's true. That did it. He just was like, "No."
Yeah.
So, Books, where does that leave Sam Bennett and Tkachuk to get under the skin of the Edmonton Oilers? And is it has to be Evander Kane who's going to be the guy that comes back at them, and is he smart enough to handle that?
Yeah, that's smart enough to handle it, but still smart enough to give you the minutes, like drive to the paint, work it off the wall, do all those other things that you need to do without being distracted. I don't know. Like, it's to be determined. The Oilers have their hands full here because literally, I know that we say that certain teams come at you in waves, but that is the Florida Panthers. Like, you know, how do you want to play the game? You know, and I would actually, I guess, counter that by saying that you know, with the Chuck's history at the Battle of Alberta and all that kind of stuff, let's see if he can reel it in a bit when he's playing games in Edmonton, because you know that fan base will be all over him like a rash. But I don't know. I feel like the way the Panthers, like the way that they play the game as a group, if they want to play heavy hard, we'll stick up for each other. That's fine. You want to run and gun? We'll pump 60 shots on goal. Like, you know, how do you want to do this? Right. So, the Oilers will be exposed. They'll have a hard time with like the CCs and the Kulaks. Maybe I don't know what happens with Desharnais, and certainly Skinner is going to have his eyes full. If you get my drift, like there's going to be lots of action in the paint area.
I can see a world, and Kip, I don't know, maybe you think this is way off base, but I can see a world where Florida wants to get in the Oilers' face and intimidate them and do what they always do, but then the Oilers just keep burning them on the power play. Like, could it make force them to be like, God, do we want to keep doing this? And getting more frustrated on Florida's end and kind of forgetting about their own game. Like, is there a world for either of you guys where Edmonton is actually handles this well?
I don't know if we really saw many examples of that even during the regular season.
I don't think I've ever seen it, but Edmonton has the power play to do it.
Yeah, they do. I guess my answer would be, if this was Florida's first rodeo, like last year, I do believe they take something from that, you know? Yeah, they got their rear ends handed to them, but they're fighting injury, but they're going to take, there's a takeaway, right? So, like, knowing some of the guys that I know in that organization behind the scenes as well, I think you're going to see a lot of pucks pumped into Ekholm's corner, and we're going to wear him down as much as we possibly can early in the series, because CeCe's an easier guy on that side of the ice to expose. The other thing is here, keep an eye on this. This is something that Barkey does exceptionally well. If there's nothing available off the rush, even on power play zone or power play zone entries, they'll chip it to an area where Skinner's not going to be able to make a play on the puck. So it'll be on his backhand side, for example. So, you know, like he's going to get on that side of the quadrant and there's going to be no play to be made. And they'll jump on them on that side of the ice. And to me, that's the weaker side of the ice too. Like if Bouchard wants to take half a second off, like he sometimes does, he's going to be wearing a Florida Panther down low in the zone in a hurry.
Did you guys see the Knobloch quote where he said, talked about experience in the final, and he said, yeah, ask the Buffalo Bills about that experience. Like, that's a little incendiary to me. I like it. I like its confidence. Do you have any thoughts on that quote?
I was more curious about the quote where he interviewed for Paul Maurice to be on his staff once upon a time and didn't get the job. So that was...
oh, really?
That was another one. You know what? I mean, hey, listen, Knobloch has been thrust into a situation that he's handled. It's really interesting. Every coach that's kind of gone through Edmonton recently, like he, Dave Tippett a few years ago, he's that kind of grainy kind of, you know what I mean, old school kind of guy. And then you bring in, what's his name?
Woodcroft.
Jay Woodcroft. And he's kind of got a little bit of the howdy-doody, happy-go-lucky kind of look to him. And now you got Knobloch, who's like so cerebral. So, I don't know. Like, I really do feel this about the coaching that's going on behind the scenes in this series. I think that the Edmonton Oilers, with Mark Stewart running the penalty kill and you know, with Paul Coffey there and just everything that's going on behind the scenes, I really feel like that's a team effort where Maurice is definitely the alpha dog on the Panthers bench.
Can I give you the best quote and my favorite that's been out now for a while now, but probably is hitting home the most? Stanley Cup or bust? Books, what does bust mean to you?
Oh boy. If you lay an egg in four or five games, that's bust for sure. You know, you get all the way to this point. I hate to say it. I don't hate to say it. I think the Oilers are built differently than the Panthers. I think the Panthers are built more for this type of grind at this time of year, at the end of the year. I really do. But I'm a Canadian. I want a Canadian team worse than anybody else to win the Stanley Cup. I really do. But if you go out with a flicker here, and I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be a 7-game series. I really do. Or bust. It's always hard when you get this far. You know how hard it is to get to this point. So Stanley Cup or bust seems a little bit over the edge.
What do you think? What does it mean to you? What are you driving at?
I'm driving at that. First of all, I absolutely love it because there's no, it's not a wishy-washy thing. It's like we're going big or we're going home. And going home for me means that there could be major change. This team could look drastically different in a year or a year and a half.
Going to the Stanley Cup final?
Yes. Yes.
Is it different depending on how the final goes?
No, I think I really believe that if the Oilers do not win the cup, then those two guys have to revisit where they want to be in the next 5-8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bust part for me. What does it mean to Leon?
Pile pressure on
Kip. What does it mean to Leon Draisaitl? Does he re-sign as early as July 1st with a loss? Does he need to know what McDavid's going to be making a year later? Does he need to know how much they're going to spend on Bouchard in 2 years? Where's the money going? Is this the best chance that I had to win a Stanley Cup now, even from 2 years from now? That's the bust part for me.
But what I would say to that, and I like that, actually, that whole approach. If my one takeaway as a competitor would be that if we work so hard to get this far, and I look around the room at the end of the day and you're not injured and I don't feel like you gave the best version of yourself for whatever the reason was, you didn't fight through a check a little harder, you know, you just didn't, you know what I mean? Like just that extra 10%, let's call it. If I look around the room and I see that we don't have it out of certain guys, that's where the bust part would come for me. I'd be like, Jesus, like we came this far and I can't get 10 more points, 10 or more percent out of that guy. That would really bother me.
Yeah.
All right. You good?
No, I think we got to go.
Okay. All right, Books. Excellent stuff. I'm noticing
his background's so good.
A nice new background on your Zoom call here. And
thank you.
The only thing missing is a few like real Kipper and Bourne labels. Maybe we'll get you a hat or something.
I've been bugging Sammy for like sweatshirt stuff, whatever. But you know, Sammy, he's busy at Blue Jay jersey launch party.
Here we go.
Come to the Alpha Dog. Yeah. Don't mess
Talk
with these
Talk to the guy
guys.
With sway around here.
All right,
it's
Books.
Not me.
Great job, buddy, as always. Thanks. Enjoy game one Saturday night.
See you, boys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Books.
Yeah. I just think that
it like
any other team, because of this stupid salary cap, things could look much differently. And, you know, a year and a half from now, like, look at Bouchard right now. He's going to be a restricted free agent. And then he's 2 years away from signing a big deal.
I'm not going to do that with
Bouchard just saying,
for them right now.
I'm just saying, though. Like,
I'll do it with Draisaitl.
That's the bust part for me. That's the bust part for me is, like, what will this team look like if they don't win their cup, and where does it go from here? So that's a challenge for any team at any time.
Look, Florida is walking 12 guys or something to UFA. Reinhart's a UFA. Montour's a UFA. They're just
Ekblad is going to want $8+ million. I don't think Florida's going to give them $8 million.
Yeah, like it matters. You don't get many chances in the salary cap era because you can't keep all your good players.
You know, in many ways, you could probably say This is Florida's year or bust as well.
I think so for Florida for sure.
Right?
They're going to lose pieces.
But, I mean, there's no pressure on them.
Well, because it's Florida.
Yeah. It's no one cares. There's no stakes for them.
No stakes.
Well, I mean, like for their team, they want the
no
cup.
No external pressure?
Zero external pressure.
What is that hat?
Austria Valley.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. When I was playing yesterday.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Or you want to do game time?
Let's take a break. And then we'll do Carter, talk about the goalies, and we'll do game time after that.
You heard the man. He's back. Sammy McKee. More real Kipper and Bourne after these words.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sammy McKee, a few minutes, we'll welcome in Carter Hutton, former NHL goaltender. Doing some work now with dailyfaceoff.com, helping us tee up the Stanley Cup final, including the matchup.
Goalies.
Skinner versus Bobrovsky.
Maybe the more lopsided matchup on paper. Who's Skinner gone up against in the playoffs so far? Talbot in round one? Aiden Hill?
Nope.
Who do they get?
It was Vancouver. So they had...
Shelov.
Shelov's. Ottinger.
Okay, so Talbot, Shelov's, Ottinger. Now he gets Bobrovsky. He's been as good or better than most.
6-2 his last eight.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I hate the cherry-picked stats. You know, the like over the random.
Well, he's been good since he was
the
told.
Last 10.
Well, since he came back.
Since
the reset. Okay. It's not that arbitrary because there is a clear divider there. All right, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And I picked Dallas, of course, looking like an idiot right now.
Such a dummy.
But it was based on Ottinger being like that Ottinger we saw versus Calgary once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just hit and miss. Is the hope now that Bobrovsky can go into a cold spell?
He can, but he's really found his game in the playoffs. I mean, he was pulled 2 years ago in the playoffs for Alex Lyon. Actually, Lyon started the playoffs. Do you remember the year the Leafs played Florida? Yeah, and then Bob kind of came in and found his game, much like Skinner has here. He's
been
awesome since.
Someone that knows the position a heck of a lot better than the three of us. Let's welcome him in, Carter Hutton. How are you, pal?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. And well, I'll see if I know the position. We'll see what my predictions are like here.
All right, so... let's just start first and foremost with the blueprint of Edmonton leaning towards that Vegas that we can win the Stanley Cup with an Aiden Hill type of guy. And then you got Florida that goes all in on their $10 million star goaltender here. So which one's more in line with 2024 to win a Stanley Cup?
You know, right now it's tricky to say, right? I think he gets protected a lot with Skinner, you know, with having the guys they have and the offense they can create. And I think if you look firsthand, I know you talked about you had Dallas, and I think beforehand, everybody talked about the lopsided matchup, right? You had Ottinger versus Skinner and how Ottinger was so much better, and the goalie matchup went to Dallas, and Skinner ended up pulling through there. And I think that reset helped. And for Bobrovsky, he's been great, right? Like I heard Bourne talked about before he jumped on there about how Alex Lyon was the guy. And that year, we talked about how bad that contract was and how you can't pay a guy $10 million and how it's horrible. And now everybody's sitting here going, Shesterkin's going to get paid that kind of money, right? Now we need that guy. So I think for me, it'll be interesting the matchup in the sense of Bobrovsky last year was steamrolling into the playoffs, right? Into the finals, he had a .935 save percentage. And he kind of laid an egg in the finals against Vegas, right? I don't know if he ran out of gas or what it was, but it was 21 goals in five games. And granted, the last game was a blowout, but in the sense, he was definitely not the Conn Smythe favorite headed in, and he kind of failed to produce in the finals.
Do you ever, like when you were playing, I guess you're always competing against yourself, but would you ever put yourself up against the guy across the rink from you and say, okay, I need to be better? Here in Toronto, it was always, oh, Freddie Anderson never outplayed his guy. Would you think about it as a competition like that?
I did, honestly, when I was younger, Bourne. Like, when I was a kid, I would be, like, when I first broke in, I was so consumed with, like, who I was playing against. Like, if I had a big matchup, I remember my first time playing against, like, Henrik Lundqvist at MSG, and I was like, oh, I'm playing against Hank. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you get a little more mature, and you start to understand, like, I can't control what he's going to do. I can't control if I'm going to get 10 shots. I can't control if I'm going to get 40 or which way the game's going to go. So I think when you start to compartmentalize that side of the game, you become more effective. And Bob definitely has that in his favor, I think, to just be like, he's going to go out and worry about himself, where Skinner's going to go out and, you know, and he's got to play well. There's been so much pressure on him. But also in Skinner's defense, I think this reset and the way the season started, he has that to draw upon, right? We talk about that reset where he finds his game. And so there's definitely the green aspect of Skinner going into this final. But then I also think Bob has a little bit of demons dealing with last year's Stanley Cup final.
You know, Bob Bobrovsky's 35 years of age, and no one saw, I think, two Stanley Cup finals and maybe one of them turning into a Stanley Cup. 3 years ago?
No.
What for you has been the major difference for him? Because, you know, everybody I talk to says this guy's an absolute specimen. There's no real wear and tear. This guy takes care of himself. He's impeccable when it comes to details in his game. Yet he was never able to put it together Carter, until the last few years. What has been the major change, and how? What are the odds of somebody doing this at age 33 and 34 to get to this point?
You know, I think it's a great example of adapting to survive, too, for Bob, right? It wasn't ever lack of effort. It was effort in the right direction. Because a goalie coach of mine, Mitch Korn, famous guy I dealt with a lot in Nashville, used to always talk about how Bobrovsky was so ripped and he Olympic lift and he did all these things. Then he had some groin trouble. He struggled with groin issues. They put a mesh in. He had dealt with that. Then I think you have to adapt your game, too, where as the games change as well, we've seen that, right? Third, fourth lines when I first broke into the NHL was all big defensive guys responsible. Then all of a sudden, the signing bonus changed and you could have all these younger guys come in who are less defensive. So for him, there's more chances. I think as he matured and he developed his game off the rink, you know, with that work ethic, but in the right direction, being able to play within himself and not chase the game as much. You watch him now, he's much more controlled. Kind of like, you know, we talk about Carey Price being at times boring, where he's super athletic, but he knows how to play within himself. Where I feel like Bob's game has adapted in that sense, right? He plays within his post a lot more. And even just his mental being in the net where you'll see him. I don't know if you can ever see it on TV if it doesn't show, but playing against him, I always notice that if he got scored on or rescored, he kind of had a reset he would go through, right? He'd like stand on the goal line, click his pads back together and refocus. Where when he was younger, similar to myself, I think this helped me. Not that I want to put myself in the category of Bobrovsky, but I was more emotional, right? If we scored, I'd get excited. If I got scored on, I'd get fired up. Where I learned to deal with like the sports psych side of it and just being focused in the moment. Then I go to the bench, TV timeout, I'd relax, have fun, and then dial back in. So I think Bob has adapted his games to the times. And also I think just that mental experience of what he's dealt with throughout his NHL career.
One thing I've noticed through this playoffs, and I wrote about this last round, is I think there's been six or seven goal challenges in the postseason for goalie interference, and Florida's been in all of them. Half of them have been Bobrovsky drawing contact. When you're a goaltender, how aware are you of people being in that blue paint and around you? Would you ever push into it intentionally? Because it's at the point with Bob where I'm like, God, it feels like he almost invites the contact and wants to lean into that a bit.
Dropping the stick on occasion.
Yeah, he's
at the
always
right time.
Going, oh no, they touched me.
Yeah, well, I think it's a little bit of gamesmanship in that sense, right? But also I think it's the fact that Bob plays on the top of his crease and he relies on, you know, his lateral movement to get across the net east-west, where you look at some of the other goalies he's faced, where Shesterkin is, you know, similar in that sense, but Skinner stays deeper, Ottinger stays deeper in the net. So that contact doesn't happen as much in the blue paint. But I also think there's an element of his game where he doesn't want to get pucks deflected on him, right? And the best way to close on that is to close that gap between the tip instead of giving them space where, you know, we've talked about a lot this week, Joe Pavelski being done now. He was great at getting a higher tip, which causes a lot more trouble for a goalie when you can't close that gap. But I agree, there's a little bit of gamesmanship involved, but in the same sense, I think it's because Bob is overactive at times trying to close that gap.
Do you like Skinner's chances of getting a split?
I don't mind. I think starting on the road in Florida is the best thing for this Edmonton Oilers team, right? I think at home right now, like, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys saw the video of Connor McDavid trying to load a case of beer in his truck and he's getting assaulted by a few people where, you know, it's just, it's going to be nuts at Edmonton. And I think for Skinner, with everything that's gone on, it's, you don't want to really decompress by any means, right? You're still right in it. But I think starting on the road, getting away from all the hustle and bustle of Edmonton and all the noise is going to be the best thing for a young goalie going into a situation like this.
We had Valiquette on last week, and he talked a bit about how learning to read off your defensemen, and so then being able to play, okay, I know this guy, you know, takes away the pass well in two-on-one or whatever. For the Oilers D, it feels like their team D has gotten better throughout the year. How much does that make a difference for a goaltender when you can kind of trust certain things are going to happen with some consistency?
Yeah, it means everything. And I think for me, like drawing on my experiences, I think when I was in St. Louis that year, I led the league in save percentage and goals against. And not to put it on me by any means, it was so predictable, right? We had Colton Parenko, Joel Edmondson, Jay Bouwmeester, Pietrangelo, Robert Bertuzzo, all these big defensemen that made my game a lot easier. So I think for Stuart Skinner, they've done a great job of doing that, making adjustments throughout the year. And even during this playoff run, the penalty kill has been great. But I also see that they like to keep the puck on one side of the rink more often, right? Where now for Skinner, a bigger guy, not like Bobrovsky, his east-west game isn't as strong, right? Where he's stationary, when he's within the post, he's very hard to beat, and there's not a lot of net there. So I think the fact of the way they play really complements Skinner, especially when he's seeing the puck and feeling it.
Do you see at all the difference in this series coming down to these two goaltenders, or is there a better chance that they could especially from Skinner's part, maybe cancel each other out? Like, where do you see this series going, Carter?
You know, I honestly hate to say this because I feel like I do believe in Bob and I love his game, but I don't think he's going to get challenged like he has against these guys, right? I think the Oilers are going to put up a lot more offense and it's going to be good, but the Florida Panthers sure look good in their depth-wise, but I think Skinner is peaking at the right time, right? We talked about Dallas being such a complete team, top to bottom, having four lines. They can beat you every which way. So for Skinner going into this series, it's not necessarily about their personnel. I think it's about him just playing the right game, but I feel like this game, as long as Florida can stay out of the penalty box, I think that's where this game will be won if it goes to special teams in this series.
Yeah. Good.
Awesome stuff, Carter. Awesome.
Carter, yeah, thanks so much for your time, man.
When you go on vacation, do you just turn around and just point at someplace on your map?
Well, you know what? You know, I'm a little new to this, right? So I'd be lying if I don't want to lie to you guys. I'm sitting in my kids' room right now. So this is some.
I love it.
This is a map from we had in Buffalo. My wife got somewhere. I don't know, some sort of store. So it's in his room now, back in Thunder Bay. So this is my office. Till I get something a little better, this is it.
Buddy, it's great. It's super cool. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Hey. Although I can't say that when he's talking, I'm not kind of evaluating the different parts of the world. But thank you very much, Carter. Appreciate it.
Carter, hey. Excellent stuff.
Thanks
man.
For having me on, guys.
All right. Carter Hutton, man, those goalies, there's a reason why they all end up kind of analysts.
You know what I think it is? Think about the game. You actually have to process why things are happening.
It's like catchers, right? It's like where catchers often become analysts and often become managers because you're sitting behind the plate, you're watching the whole game develop. It's very similar to hockey.
And then I think you put the mic in a winger's face and they're like, I don't know,
Go to the sideboards.
I try to get it on my end and shoot it in the net on the other end.
It's like that map in his kids' room. They see the whole world, right? If I would have been there, I would have saw just maybe one country.
Yeah, state.
Did you guys talk about the video he brought up yesterday?
What video?
Of him with the beers?
We didn't talk about it, no.
Can I say?
You see it?
I did not see it.
What?
So it's McDavid just putting two cases of Coors Light in his trunk of his car. And there's three people taking videos with him. Like, they're on him. Like, they're trying to hug him.
I've never respected him more as a leader than I did in that moment. I'm like, that guy is truly the captain. You're Connor McDavid in Edmonton after you wanted to go to the Stanley Cup final. Send the equipment guy. Send anyone. Send Matthias Janmark. Like, what are you? He goes out in his suit to do the beer run for the guys?
You think that's for the guys?
Absolutely. Who else is it for?
Well, I don't know. It's not enough beer for the guys, is my point.
I bet you there's a few more in the trunk.
The other trips were done in the dark.
Yeah, well, that could be.
I mean, there's also a chance that he was being a really good captain and hadn't anything to drink, and everybody else had a lot. So there's also a part of it as well. But I love that video, and I just think it's hilarious that in Edmonton, Connor McDavid is doing the beer run.
That is funny.
Legends roll for that one.
But Alpha Dog.
Alpha Dog. He's like, I'll do it. Alpha I'll go. Dog. Yeah, that's an Alpha Dog move.
All right, you got game time for us?
Oh, yeah, I got to do game time.
Look at I'm glad, producing now.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember. One day off and I forget. Let me pick. It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Terry only. Please play responsibly. As I pull up the some different stuff for the NHL, if I had a recommendation, regardless of what the line is for the Toronto Blue Jays tonight, bet against them. Because they're playing a different sport than the Baltimore Orioles are currently. So the Baltimore Orioles are they're an underdog tonight at the Rogers Center, plus 100. If you could, you're going to get the Orioles at plus 100 against the Toronto Blue Jays. I would take that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's going on?
They're bad. They're bad.
Barker and Blair came in yesterday and said they're just facing the best pitcher in the American League, and I checked the final score, and they had one run. I was like, yeah, that adds up.
They're bad. It's a bad year. They got to reload. They got to figure it out and kind of start looking at 25. It's over. Okay.
most good cup holders, though.
Yeah.
Great cup holders.
Excellent
cup,
buddy. The amazing ballpark.
Great sight lines.
Most goals in the series. Who do you think the favorite is?
We did a little of this yesterday, and I believe it's Zach Hyman.
It is.
Yeah.
Plus 350.
Plus 350. I was saying the good odds of the guys who fall on the goalie, that being like Bennett and Kane.
I'm sorry I didn't listen to the show.
You have. It's all right. When was the last time you had 250 goal scorers in a Stanley Cup final?
and
on opposite sides. Maybe your dad's era, maybe with Bossy.
But I mean, think about how many guys in the series have scored 50. Because also McDavid, also Draisaitl. So you got 450.
One in the same season.
Yeah, have you gone head to head? Last year we had a Stamkos and Matthews, but oh yeah, Stamkos didn't in the same year. Yeah, I don't know how often they've had two guys with 55 plus. Yeah. Like this.
And by the way, just to quickly answer your question before we go here about the the head-to-head, somebody tweeted us and said that Datsyuk versus Crosby in those finals.
That's interesting. That's really good. That's a great example.
One of the best.
And Datsyuk's a good example for Barkov because he's also good offensively the way Barkov is.
I think Datsyuk was
different defensive styles.
That was very anticipated.
But Datsyuk was a pickpocket. He was the artful dodger, you know, like compared to Barkov, who's a little more like a big man.
Flashier offensively, too, than Barkov is. Those some of his goals, like his highlight reel. He might have the best mixtape of all time, Datsyuk. So,
no argument. Anyways,
that's Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
You asked me yesterday about Joe Pavelski.
Yeah.
I struggled with that name.
Yeah.
He plans to retire.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. I really do. I think that just watching Dallas lose and in the manner that they lost and how they were close, but at the end, their veteran players just ran out of gas.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why is because you get old and the game goes on you.
The game gets 2% faster every year. And so if you're not making 3% gains to get better, you know, you're starting to fall behind a little bit. And it's hard when you're 30, whatever, to keep getting better.
I hate watching
3% better. Like,
once upon a time, great players just hang on.
Here's the quotes from Pavelski. I don't want to say this is official, but you know, the plan is not to be coming back. There'll be more to come on that. Everything's still raw, like nothing official. There'll be more words, and I'm going to need a little bit of time to really put it together and figure it out that way. Doesn't it sound like he's coming back like in December of some year or something?
I can't go through
another season, but I might still want to win a cup.
We had Gary Galley on yesterday.
Gals, the man.
He's a man.
Yeah,
love him. And he just talked about being one of those guys that played for a very long time and then having that sourness of watching a team lift a Stanley Cup and knowing that.
That sucks for Pavelski.
You know, and it does suck. It does suck to be that good, that long, and have teams that were close, many of them in San Jose.
God, Thornton, Marleau, Pavelski,
Dallas,
Couture,
so
Boyle.
Close. And, it's got to suck watching.
Hope he wins on as a coach.
Inevitable question is the Hall of Fame question.
For Pavelski?
Day long for me. He was a difference maker.
You know, his numbers are pretty astounding.
Let's
hear it. Played 1,332 games.
Wow.
Regular season. 476 goals, 592 assists for 1,068 points. Played 201 playoff games.
Yeah. Yeah.
74 playoff goals, 69 assists, 143 playoff points, and 201 games.
There's a group of guys like that, and I'll include John Tavares in that. We've had this conversation earlier in the year.
Close to the amount of playoff
games.
Not even close.
No, if I'm not mistaken, maybe Tavares is at 60, 65, and never saw the light of day.
62.
62. Mm-hmm. Can't even compare that to Pavelski. No. It's not even close.
It's not.
I would say the fundamental difference for me.
The difference makers.
Yeah, for sure.
And whether you should get in or not.
But I will say, part of what the Hall of Fame is to me is, was this person at any point one of the best players in the world? You know, like a guy you went, that is one of the most famous people in the league because he's exceptional.
Why? Like where? Where was he one of the best?
Well, Tavares was a point off the Art Ross one year. You know, like Pavelski was never a top few point guy. You know, I know who you'd rather have your team. I get it. But I'm just saying, I don't know. He never felt like a top five guy in the league, let alone top 10 to me.
To Pavelski. Me, a Hall of Fame player now is, were you a difference maker when, you know, your team needed to win? But
we gotta go.
I'm not voting.
We're off tomorrow. Back Friday. Blue Jays afternoon game. Good luck.
Our thanks to Carter Hutton and Jason Bukala. See you on Friday.